Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I am proud to bring you Sword and Sandal Cinema. I will be starting with a legend of Hercules that ties to the quest for the Golden Fleece. The Incredible Hulk Hercules Unleashed one-shot from 1996 unfolds in the post-Onslaught period of the Marvel Multiverse. Hercules has just returned to Gaia from his outer space adventures with Deathcry, only to discover that many of his companions in the Avengers are missing and, given the circumstances, presumed dead. Though the tale focuses primarily on an epic battle between Hercules and the Hulk, it also contains frequent flashbacks to mythic Greece, including during the days of the Argo's return voyage. There's more. Zeus and Hera, the death of Jason, an enigmatic prophecy, a hulking centaur with a deadly gift of fiery purification, and even Hercules' apotheosis. This was definitely worth the $250 I paid for it back in the day, and is still worth the occasional reread more than two decades later. And now we will go to a song, The Golden Bough, which again echoes themes from ancient Greece.
I am lost, so lost on my way.
Greetings and welcome back to Sword and Cinema. I am Hercules Invictus, and now for another Legend of Hercules, Medea, with Maria Callas. In a land where centaurs are real, a young man receives instruction on the nature of rites, rituals, and mythic realities from his hooved mentor. As he gets older, his tutor becomes increasingly more human and reveals to him the harsh facts of life that are obscured by myth. Reason slowly replaces the gods of childhood. In a more eastern and exotic place, people in colorful costumes sacrifice a youth and eat his flesh. Their mythic reality is very much alive and closely related to the cycles of nature and their experience of life. Echoes of this time and place still echo in the religious life of many people. Jason demands the return of his kingdom from his uncle Pelias. He is told that he will be granted it if he can produce the Golden Fleece, a talisman of great power. Companions are gathered, fellow youths who will eventually mature into the Argonauts in future retellings. They are twins, a musician, a powerfully built man, and an archer. All of them are robbers and delight in the acquisition of treasure. Jason is something of a ladies' man himself. The Argo is a mere raft, and the vast seas crossed are mostly of sand. Meanwhile, Medea reacts to something symbolic that teasingly eludes her comprehension. The Golden Fleece is enshrined in a holy sanctuary that will one day evolve into our idea of a temple or a church. She enlists the aid of her brother, the priest who presided over the earlier sacrifice, and together they steal the Golden Fleece. While fleeing, they encounter Jason and his band. To slow down her father and his warriors, who are in hot pursuit, she slaughters her brother and roughly cuts him into chunks. Aeetes and his army, horrified, stop to lovingly collect each piece. Priestess and the crew of the Argo make good their escape. On the return voyage, cultures clash and Medea loses her spiritual center, the myths that gave meaning to her life. Bringing the Golden Fleece to Pelias, Jason voices his realization that the kingdom he once desired is now too small, and that the Golden Fleece is meaningless outside of its mythic context. Jason and Medea part ways, and those who shared their adventure and live outside the circle of cultural influence mostly making love. Chiron appears again to Jason as a centaur and as a man, then expresses vital truths Jason is not prepared to hear. In a moving moment that spans several years, the couple is settled in Jason's childhood culture, where he seems comfortable and happy. Seeing him dancing in celebration with other men, something Greeks do to this very day, Medea decides and descends into powerlessness to reclaim her lost self. She reconnects. Sorry about that. She reconnects with her sun god and becomes the instrument of his holy wrath. She encourages Jason to marry Princess Glaucea of Corinth, then actively imagines how to best destroy the world. Anticipating trouble, King Creon exiles Medea and her children from his city. He grants her the extra day she requests, knowing that he may live to regret it. Indeed, he does, but fortunately not for long. What is myth? What is reality? Are our actual experiences external or internal to us? How much of what we experience is shaped and colored by our personal beliefs? Pasolini's Medea, loosely based on Euripides' play and starring Maria Callas, is a thought-provoking film that tackles these timeless questions. It is definitely worth watching and contemplating. Onwards. Note for those who may be a bit on the prudish side, there are two scenes with brief nudity in this film. And now we proceed to Ron Carson. Greetings and welcome, Ron. How are you?
Good evening, Hercules. How are you doing today, Xadolfa?
Doing great. Very busy, but productively busy.
Yeah, same with me over here. That's why I got sidetracked at work, so hence the delay in us checking in. But here we are, and the audience is enjoying a very, very classic peplum film, the 1964 release of The Fall of the Roman Empire.
Awesome. We get Mythic Voyages and the Fall of an Empire, all in an hour.
That is correct. This is a very, very, enhanced sword and sandal film, and it was considered to be a blockbuster, but it did not fare out very well at the box office. They actually spent $16 million in making this picture, and it only garnered $4.8 million. So I would say that it was only one-fourth of its expectations.
Okay. It was a good movie, if I remember correctly. If memory serves, it was an enjoyable film.
Oh, yeah. I remember us seeing it when we were ye lads and many moons ago on TV. I don't know if we saw it in the theater. I think we were a little too young when that came out.
I believe so. I was
five.
Yeah,
but we did see it on television. I know that for a fact. I mean, it's a Paramount Pictures release, and it had some pretty big stars in it, too. It was your friend Stephen Boyd, who, of course, was co-star with Charlton Heston and Ben-Hur. Originally, they wanted Heston to be in the picture, but he backed out, and he started another project entitled 55 Days at Peking a year before this particular film was shot. And also, big names included Sophia Loren, Sir Alec Guinness, James Mason, Christopher Plummer, Mel Ferrer, Omar Sharif, John Ireland, Anthony Quayle, just to name a few. This is a pretty good cast, if you ask me.
That is a stellar cast. I'm surprised it underperformed in the theaters.
It did, for some strange reason. It was not given to me as a reason of what happened when it was released, but columnist Hedda Hopper, from Los Angeles, she used to do a lot of movie reviews. If you remember, her son William was Detective Paul Drake on Perry Mason with Raymond Burr.
Yes, I remember.
And she said, quote, "This beautiful, honest, superbly done film will make millions." Well, her prognostication was not correct, unfortunately. There is a footnote on this. When they screened it at the Cannes Film Festival in 1964, the lovely Sophia Loren was a special guest and appeared at the premiere and came in by chariot, if you can believe it.
Huh. I can believe it.
Oh, yeah. So it was based out of a novel which was written by Harry Whittington and published by Fawcett Publications, and that's how the screenplay came into fruition. Now, we take you back to the winter of 180 AD. Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius was battling German tribes from invading northern territories on the Danube River. And also, he had a Greek ex-slave called Timonidis and General Gaius Livius. Now, Aurelius nominated Livius, his closest friend, and the lover of the emperor's daughter, Lucilla. That, of course, was Stephen Boyd and Sophia Loren in the title roles. Aurelius had a very bad finish as he was poisoned by Commodus's cronies, but Livius pretty much dedicated himself to extracting heavy taxes from Providence to enrich this from provinces. I don't know why I mentioned Providence, but but he was appointed to that position. I'm sorry?
That would have been strange if it was Providence.
Yes, if it was Providence, Rhode Island over here.
That's the Romans all right, America and settled in the northeast coast.
Yes, Americans settled in the capital city of Rhode Island.
There you go.
Now, let me continue. Livius had an army of men who defeated the Germans and had pretty much picked up Balibar and his court as captives. Balibar, of course, was played by John Ireland in that particular picture. And Timonidis, I love that name, you know?
Yes, I like it too.
Very, very Greek sounding in more ways than one. He pretty much wanted to get the Germans in his side. And this is what he did in the movie. If you remember this scene, he had his hand held in the flame of a torch without crying. And then the German captives then later on were turned over to become farmers on Italian land, and they encouraged fellow barbarians to pretty much cooperate with Roman instincts over here. And Lucilla, of course, is in Livius's side as she joined a revolt as well. But Livius pretty much has not put aside his personal feelings for this young lady, as he still wanted to preserve the empire. Instead, the Emperor Commodus pretty much has captured Livius and Lucilla, and they're going to be burned alive as human sacrifices, if you could believe it. And this is because they were trying to make Commodus abdicate, but the emperor backed down in more ways than one. But Commodus and Livius fought in a duel with javelins in the Roman Forum, and Livius wound up the winner and winds up departing the city with his love, Lucilla. So the Roman Empire did not fall immediately because of the fact that internal corruption led to its eventual demise. So there you go. That's a little plot synopsis. Yeah.
So,
as you know, the
and memory and what you're telling me, I don't know why this didn't make it, because everything from a great cast to an epic story to again, I don't remember the whole movie, but I remember watching it, and I remember bits and pieces of it.
I remember.
I'm very surprised.
I remember watching it with you in the old black and white console set in the Bronx.
Yep.
We really got into this, and I'm pretty sure you have a copy of this on DVD somewhere in your collection.
I'm sure somewhere in my collection I do. Oh, by the way, concerning my collection, I only have one copy of Atlas and the Cyclops. The other copy of it is on an anthology where there's like 50 movies in one box.
Yeah.
So it is separate. So I can't give you that one, but I have some other ones that are duplicates. So next time I see you, I will.
So I won't have a copy of Atlas and the Cyclops, in other words.
Not in the near future, no. I might come across another copy, but I have some doubles, so I will share those with you when I see you.
All right, sounds good. We'll talk about it when I see you. You know, Easter's around the corner, so we'll negotiate at some point. But I wanted to say that the film did win a Golden Globe Award for Best Music Original Score, and it was nominated a couple of months later for an Academy Award, but was not garnered a Golden Statuette. And the gentleman who was responsible for the musical score was Dmitry Tiomkin. So there you go. That was the accolade of this particular film, that it did win a Golden Globe, but not an Oscar. And the soundtrack is over 150 minutes long. It was recorded at the Royal Albert Hall and released by Columbia Records. So there are exactly 24 selections in this particular soundtrack to the fall of the Roman Empire. So that's another sidebar over here, because even though it didn't really garner too well in the budget-wise, it did receive a very good nod for its musical score. So this is interesting. We're going to go back to the casting, because, as you know, Stephen Boyd and Charlton Heston appeared in the classic Ben-Hur, one of our favorite couple of movies of all time. And originally, they wanted Livius to be played by Kirk Douglas, believe it or not, and he turned it down.
Why did he turn it down?
I guess he didn't really elaborate, but I guess he was on the fringe of Spartacus, if you remember, which was another fantastic Peplum movie, near and dear to us. And originally, Sophia Loren was not cast as Lucilla. They were considering Gina Lollobrigida in this particular role.
Oh, wow.
And Alec Guinness, you know, Sir Alec Guinness, Obi-Wan Kenobi from Star Wars, was Marcus Aurelius, and then Richard Harris, Albert Finney, John Gielgud, Terrence Stamp were considered for other roles in this movie, But then Commodus was finally acted by Christopher Plummer. If you remember, he was in The Sound of Music opposite Julie Andrews. And you actually did see Omar Sharif, John Ireland, Anthony Quayle, and Mel Ferrer in supporting roles. So filming of this movie took quite a long time. And it had to suspend it due to a severe blizzard in Europe around that vicinity where they were doing this particular picture. So the interior scenes were shot in Madrid. The outdoor scenes over on the Danube River just past Spain. And 8,000 soldiers were included in this particular making of the outdoor scenes, including 1,200 cavalry. Very much so. This film was finished after 140 days. So it did take a while until they got this done. And they had some adverse conditions to go with it, too. So, but all in all, I do remember this film to be a very, very entertaining piece of cinema. And originally, what they were going to do was have a much longer version of this picture. But they had to chop it down by a half an hour. I mean, fact was, I'll tell you why in a second over here. Tell you why they pretty much, the original running time was 188 minutes. Now, it had an overture, an intermission, and an exit music. But because of the general release worldwide, they chopped it down to half by half an hour, so it's a 154-minute picture instead of 184. And here's a fun fact about the DVD. It's a three-disc set, and it includes lots of bonus features, including Bill Bronson. He's the son of Samuel Bronson, who produced the picture. Biographer Mel Martin also had his say in this. They also have a reproduction of the original souvenir program that they were handing to audiences. Boy, I wish I was there for that one. I would have loved to have had that in my collection, you know? And they were five Encyclopedia Britannica featurettes. Oh, encyclopedias. Do you remember we used those quite a lot when we were young?
In grammar school, yes, I remember those.
Yes. Oh, God. Nothing beats an encyclopedia when you had to do an essay or a term paper. I loved it. But gone are those days, unfortunately, you know? I mean, we actually did all our stuff manually, if you recall. And the encyclopedia really, really did the job in more ways than one, for sure.
No internet, no online, no computers, just basically find the right book either at your home library of encyclopedias or go to the library itself and seek out.
Well, I remember borrowing your encyclopedia whenever I had to do reports because I remember you guys had one. So there was many a time that I had to come over to the Bronx or over at the old house in Washington Heights to take care of some book reports and essays and then later on eventually term papers. So, oh, nothing like the good old days. You know, I live in the past, Savita.
Well, the past is a very nice place to be. I like the present and the future, too. This is an awesome experience.
Well, I kind of differ with you on that one. I mean, I like the past more than the present and the future. Oh, in the bonus features, you also got six color production stills, sort of like little lobby cards. If you remember, which they don't have in theaters anymore. Remember when you used to go to the RKO and they had stills, you know, on the window with the poster? Those were called lobby cards.
Yes, I know. Yeah, Brian and several of our other hosts collect the lobby cards.
I would love to have some in my collection, you know?
You could find them floating around at the toy fairs, oddly. When Athena and I had our business and we were doing different fairs, I'd always see people selling lobby cards inexpensively at toy fairs.
Yes, I have to look into that for sure. Absolutely. Because it was like what do you call, one of those collectibles that I would really love to have. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, but there you go. This is a look back at the terrific preparation and showing of the fall of the Roman Empire. It is just unbelievably a very, very well-done peplum picture, but it didn't live up to expectations. That's what's pretty surprising about that.
Any plans to remake it or have they remade it? Because a lot of films like Spartacus.
Well, actually, I'm getting to that right now, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
What happened was that if you remember the 2000 movie Gladiator.
Yes.
With Russell Crowe. That was like a blueprint from the fall of the Roman Empire, only a lot more, you know, newer and a lot more gorier than the original, if you ask me. So.
Yeah, I like the Gladiator, and it started off the new peplum, the
yes.
Gladiator movie. And Nick...
yes, I do remember that, and
Nicholas
I do remember that in more ways than one.
He wrote the book on that, so he literally wrote the book on the new peplum.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer in that, you know, so basically wanted to let you know that that particular movie picked up the skeleton of the fall of the Roman Empire. So,
So okay, and, so continuing Gladiator. That's a worthy heir to the film. You know, Gladiator, it showed such promise for the new wave of peplum. Many people who like the old peplum are disappointed by many of the films that came out after Gladiator.
Yeah. Duly noted, as they say. But I know you have that movie in your collection somewhere.
Gladiator, yes. Gladiator. And
I'm talking about I'm talking about the fall of the Roman Empire.
Yeah, I'm sure I have it somewhere. It would be very unbelievable if I didn't have it somewhere.
Well, the scavenger hunt will begin.
it'll be on my list of things to do after I finish doing the current things I'm doing.
Well, it would be interesting to revisit it. You know what I mean? Because of the fact that I kind of like jogged your memory on this.
Right.
And I really picked this out of the blue because, again, we're doing the operation of the Colosseum. Sans, our partner in arms here, Andrea Tetrani, who is off again this month, believe it
yeah,
or not.
She had said that the tour season, last time I communicated with her, which was last month before that show, she had said that she'd be out of commission for a couple of months because of tour
mm-hmm.
season down there, and they're phenomenally busy in the hospitality industry. So I'm sure she'll
well,
be back.
Well, it gets very lonely. It gets very lonely running the Colosseum without her over here, but the show must go on, just like the old Three Dog Night song used to say.
I remember that.
That was a good song, too. I mean,
now,
our generation of music, our generation of music just can't be beat. I mean, we normally do play 50s, 60s, and 70s music before the screening of these pictures, you know?
Right.
And the audience enjoys it, too.
Yes, they do.
So.
I, my specialty is in music, though, so I'll let you put together a special on the music of the peplums or Nick Dyack.
Yeah, you know something? I would love to exercise that as a topic, you know, down the road.
Okay, plan it and we'll do it.
Yeah, we'll pretty much collaborate with Andrea on that one, and we'll put together a nice compilation of soundtrack material, and eventually we'll go to another realm and kind of like explaining all this enhancement of the genre that we have known to grow and love over here. So there we go. So people are enjoying this picture. We did give them an intermission, and eventually they get the exit music, and we actually got some our hands on some of those programs too. So they're going to each receive one of those souvenir edition Fall of the Roman Empire guides, and you know, keep one for myself, keep one for you too.
that is awesome. We'll have the quest for that. Did you know that you mentioned things being given away in theaters, that custom was prevalent in ancient Rome itself? People used to get giveaways in the gladiator arenas, just like they did in the movie theaters during mm-hmm. our parents' generation. They would go to see a movie, and there were all sorts of things that they would see beyond the movie. There was a cartoon. There was news. There was...
Oh, yeah. I mean... We pretty much had the potpourri of everything, I remember. The newsreel, the cartoon, the trailers. I mean, when we went to the movies, that's when it was the bomb. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And
these days...
new things was also used in the historical arenas. People used to go there. They used to get like other shows with their gladiator games live, of course. And then they would get take-homes, things to take home to, and remember the gladiator games. And they found recently that some families have put them like in trunks in the attic and just changed them over to new trunks as the centuries passed. So some people still had these giveaways that were given to their ancestors hundreds of years ago or more than 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, that's so awesome. It really takes me back in time. That's what's nice about these particular moments when we were going to movies, you know? So
now
I definitely have a stroll down memory lane in more ways than one by talking about this right now, and it's kind of like brightening up my mood here. So anyway, I do believe we're done.
Okay, I do have a new show starting soon and a new initiative. I'll be announcing the new initiative at the Disclosure Network New York this Sunday where I'm speaking. But in terms of our podcast, there will be a show dedicated to the Golden Fleece, the quest for the Golden Fleece, or the Voyage of the Argo. So this will be a monthly show, and there's tons of material to review. There's tons of people to speak to, so I'm going to be embarking on that voyage, and I'll be asking all our hosts if they want to be part of that journey. That is what we'll be doing. And thank you for being on the show. I know that you're tied up at the studio with your editing and things. To be continued, and I have one of our other hosts in the audience today. So if she's available, I will be interviewing her and telling her about this new initiative. And if not, I will probably be reviewing something else related to Jason and the Argonauts. So thank you. Be well. Take care.
You do the same, Sazafe, and I hope to see you next month with the holiday around the corner. Another thing I wanted to remind everybody is that Brian Walker has that beautiful drive-in page on Facebook that you definitely have to check out.
Yes.
And is he going to be coming up next right now?
Brian was not feeling well. He contacted me a little bit before the show that he's not feeling well. So I told him, take care of yourself. Get better. So he won't be on tonight.
But definitely go on his Facebook page and check out some links where he actually gives you some of these classic B movies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely worth a look, and like the page, and you basically will have a very interesting adventure going into Brian's drive-in. So I always like to acknowledge Brian, since normally he follows me during my monthly get-together with you, Xavafe. So
yes, Brian is a legend. He started Brian's drive-in theater 25 years ago, and in a few months we're going to do a special for him next, and I'd like to invite you to that if you'd like. Also, it'll be a tribute to his
I would be honored to be a part of that. I would love to kibitz with him, and then later on, eventually, Brian and I have to meet one of these days too.
Yep, that's on the agenda someplace. There's a project. Brian's going to be part of that project. So meeting him is in the cards at some point in the not so near future, but still not so far future either.
Excellent. All right, so I bid you farewell, my brother. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I hope I pretty much gave you a stroll down memory lane with the fall of the Roman Empire today.
Yes, you did. Thank you very much. Now I have to dig out that movie and watch it or check on YouTube or Tubi to see if it's there and saving myself a lot of looking through DVDs and lists. But thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it. I wish you success in all your endeavors, and hopefully I'll see you next month.
Sounds like a plan. Love you.
Love you too. Take care. Have a wonderful night, and I'm going to play If You Can Dream.
All right, Galinista, θα τα πούμε.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. When love and trust are deep and fair, there is nothing your heart won't dare, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream. Till it's real. Dream till it's real. Dream till it's real.
Greetings and welcome back to Sword and Sandal Cinema. We have one of our hosts, Diana Monkford, in the audience, and she and I will be speaking. Greetings and welcome, Diana. How are you?
Well, just fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. Keeping very busy. I'm looking forward to Sunday when I'll finally meet you face to face.
Absolutely. I'll finally meet you and your beautiful wife, Athena, and all the other Disclosure Network folk. When does it start? At 4 p.m. at the center?
I believe so. I'm not positive. Athena will not be coming in. She doesn't particularly care for the city. I'll be coming in, and Michael Waterman, a.k.a. Seton of Kemet, will be there, he said. And Nick asked me to find out who else is coming so he can make sure he keeps a seat open for them.
Well, Rena Dunsworth is coming. She's wonderful.
Oh, awesome. If you can let her know to let Nick know, that would be great.
Absolutely. And everyone, you know, if you want to experience an amazing afternoon, go to the Disclosure Network at the center on 13th Street between 7th and 8th Avenues in Manhattan this coming Sunday, April 2nd. You get to meet Hercules Invictus in person. You also meet a bunch of very interesting people who are always in the on the Hercules roster of shows. It's going to be a great afternoon, and I strongly urge you to go. It's reasonably priced, very reasonably priced, actually. And after, we all go out and have coffee and BS all afternoon about what we've just heard and have a great time. So everyone, come to the center April 2nd, Sunday, late afternoon, to the Disclosure Network and meet Hercules Invictus.
Well, thank you. That was an awesome commercial.
Well, you're welcome. And buy new Tide Pods. No. But anyway, so now tell us about this wonderful new project of yours with Jason and the Argonauts.
Well, it's a project that I've done, I've launched several times in my life. The last time was in 2017.
Excuse me, you're breaking up.
Can you still hear me?
Yes, but you're breaking up.
Okay, I don't know what to do about that. Hold on, let me see what I can do.
Well, now you're not breaking up. You may have changed your position.
That's true. I may have changed my position. It might just be that we had connectivity problems throughout the day. So it might still be that too. Recently in the past year, there have been more connectivity problems with the internet than I've ever experienced before, except when we lived in the mountains of Pennsylvania. Then that was a different story.
But about your project?
The project is Jason and the Argonaut related type of activities. So I have something running still called the interactive storytelling that is for people of all ages, usually kids. It appeals to kids where they are heroes on the Argonaut voyage. And we get together and weave mutual stories that continue, and they're very closely themed with the Argonaut expedition. So these kids get to go on mythological voyages, not only with Jason and the Argonauts, but with Hercules on his labors, and they get to hunt the Erymanthian boar and all sorts of other things, experience the Trojan War and its aftermath, the Odyssey. So it's a way of experiencing the myths and tapping into the vast body of literature that's been written about them since they were first written down in ancient Greece. So that's been ongoing. And in fact, we just finished the 2-year voyage of the Argo through that, and a new one's launching in a month or so.
That's great. Do kids show up in person for this?
Yes, I do it in schools and in the homes of kids. Sometimes parents get a bunch of their kids together, and they'll hire me to do it in their home. So there's different ways of doing it. I used to do it for free in the libraries just to get people familiar with what I do and to get the taste to experience it.
Well, how can people contact you if they want to hire you?
Usually it's by word of mouth. I don't travel around as much as I did once upon a time. So here locally in Bergen County, people usually hear about it and they contact me and we set up an appointment and or I write a proposal for them, you know, whatever way they have. And that's something that's pretty much continuous. And now it took a while, but it finally caught on here locally. So I'm happy.
And also,
that.
If there are a bunch of kids, if each parent contributes something toward your fee, it turns out to be extremely cost effective.
Yeah, yes, it is. It's cost effective, and a lot of parents see it as an alternative to the after school programs that are held in the schools.
You're breaking up again.
Am I still breaking up? I switched
no.
position. No. Okay. Then the other thing is, although adults also go off on these interactive storytelling adventures, I also have for adults like guided visualizations, where we use guided visualization and active imagination and dreams to experience the myths. And these are mostly neo-Jungian or transpersonal psychology or Joseph Campbell type of things, where people relate the myths to their daily lives, and they journey through the different adventures and realize things about not only their lives, but life itself and their experience of it. And that focuses a lot on the stories that we tell ourselves and how these stories affect the life we're living. If you tell yourself sad stories or stories full of catastrophe, your life will be sad and full of catastrophes. And not that your life will be easier if you don't do that, but it'll be much more pleasant as you progress through it. And the challenges never go away, but the context in which you see the challenges, and the more you can see that you're not alone. These challenges are the subject of literature, the subject of songs, are the subject of art, they're the subjects in conversations that people have with other people. So whatever you're going through, it's universal, and you're not alone in going through it.
Well, life never changes. The technology changes, the clothes change, the food changes, but ultimately life experience is the same 5,000 years ago as it is today.
Yeah.
Happiness, joy, disappointment, love, hate, all sorts of things.
And all the things we deal with now, like the threat of totalitarianism and war and aliens from outer space or some sort of beings from outer space, these two, they've been part of the human experience since the dawn of time. We view them in different ways. We understand them and explain them in different ways, but they're still part of the human experience. So that experience is what that particular activity promotes. And then there's also the golden fleece as a metaphor for getting together with people who might not have a lot in common with you, because the Argonauts were the children of differing gods who were often at war with each other, or no god at all, or a king from a neighboring kingdom that, again, wasn't always peacefully inclined, and yet they got together and accomplished something that is still remembered thousands of years later. So those Argonaut expeditions usually pick something that needs to be addressed in the local society, and we get a bunch of people together who are interested in fixing it and see what we can do. So that's starting again, a new cycle of that activity. And then I have more, but I can't promise it yet, so I will keep silent until things click together a little bit more.
Well, do you know when the first project, the Jason Project, will start?
Well, the interactive storytelling has started, so I will talk about that at DNNY. And the other one that has to do with the psycho-spiritual journey, that I'm starting soon. The last time I had this journey was between 2017 and 2018, and I realized that that's 5-6 years ago already. So time to have another one.
Well, here's a fun fact. The men's store Brooks Brothers has always used the golden fleece as its symbol. Yeah.
Yes, people, that used to be, when I had the workshops, one of the most common things people would send me in my email, pictures of the Brooks Brothers golden fleece.
Yeah, exactly. It would behoove Brooks Brothers to hire you to do interactive storytelling in their children's department.
Maybe. I will contact them and see. Thank you. That's an excellent suggestion, and I did not think of that.
Well,
and how about you?
But anyway.
What part of the voyage of the Golden Fleece are you resonant with?
Well, we're all looking for the Golden Fleece, whatever our personal Golden Fleece might be.
Very true.
You're breaking up again.
It's very true, and that's part of the voyage, determining what your Golden Fleece is. And the first part of the adventure focuses on just that, and like, who are you really, and what do you want really? And then it gets to, is what you want what we're doing? If yes, you're welcome to go on the adventure. If so, well, thank you for going on the journey with us thus far. And if we can be of assistance, we're still here, and we wish you all the best.
You're breaking up again.
I'm sorry. There's nothing I can do. We're just having a connectivity problem. The volume has been adjusted. I've tried switching channels. It's not going to get better, I'm imagining.
Well, I'm telling you, my Golden Fleece is a phone company that actually does what it says it will do. You know, because I'm Spectrum, and they sometimes the phone just goes dead, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can hear you
really,
loud and clear. For what it's worth, I can hear you loud and clear.
Well, I speak on a landline, which makes it much easier.
Yes, it actually does. In the state of Massachusetts, landlines are still easier than the cell phones. The communication that takes place on podcasts and YouTube channels and Zoom and all that, landlines are still the best.
Well, now, how can people contact you if they want to hire you or they want to talk with you or they want to avail themselves of particular shows? How do they contact you?
Oh, wow. It's strange receiving these questions than asking them. The best way to reach me currently is on Facebook or by email. Facebook, it's Hercules Invictus. Hercules, like the ancient demigod, and Invictus as in the poem. I have several groups, and I have two accounts. So it's the account that has Mount Olympus on the picture behind my image that is the most active one. So if you're going to friend request one of them, friend request that one, and I check that at least once a day. And I also check my emails at least once a day. It's Hercules dot, like a period or a dot, Invictus@gmail.com. And those are the two I check every day. I'm not very good at texting, so if you text me, I will not get back to you right away. It's whenever somebody reminds me to text or I hear the text noise. Then I check the text, but I don't check them every day. And I am on various other social media, but I don't check the social media every day. I pretty much lurk and occasionally post something. So those are the two ways. And if you want to hire me, just let's have a conversation and give me an understanding of what it is that you would like. And if it falls within my purview, I would be more than happy to put together a program for you, your family, your friends, or a group of people with similar interests. I'm always doing that. Most recently, we started live groups again in my community at the Creskill Public Library. That closed temporarily, and we're relocating them to our homes until we find a new location. One of them is on theurgy, which is it literally means divine work or divine labors, and that's an ancient system of the highest that you can conceive, and then becoming a living channel for the highest that you can conceive in your daily affairs. And then we have another one that we call Otherworld Explorers, and that explores cryptids and ghosts and aliens and all sorts of things that people experienced in antiquity that redefined a bit, but not by that much, are still experiencing today. I write lots of articles. I get published in lots of books. Two of the books recently came out by Zontar Press. One of them is called Alien Artifacts, and the other one is called Mimics. Alien Artifacts is about, Alien Artifacts, and Mimics is about creatures or spirits or entities that look human or are experienced as human but are not really human. So those are my last two writings. I have a book that I can't talk about yet too much, but it's coming out next year about theurgy.
And you're also affiliated with Llewellyn Publishing, aren't you?
Yes. I've been reviewing Llewellyn books and interviewing Llewellyn authors, and I contributed to something there also. So I love Llewellyn. They've been my dancing partners for decades. So
mine too,
I love interacting with Llewellyn, and a lot of the folks from Llewellyn wind up becoming regulars on the show because they're incredibly awesome and they've written incredibly awesome things.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and I've been reading their moon sign guide since the 70s.
Wow.
So there you go.
Let's do a show on the moon sign guide because a lot of people are interested in the moon, and I'm more attuned to the sun. Athena is attuned to the moon more so than the sun, but I'm attuned very much with the sun and a little bit less so with the moon. So it would be an interesting show.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, I think we're out of time, aren't we?
I think so. We have 2 minutes. So now I will ask you, how can folks contact you?
Well, through you, of course.
Okay. And what is new and exciting in the
Well, let's see now. Supposedly the MNN studio, the new studio on 38th Street, between 10th and 11th Avenues, will be opening soon.
Great.
And I will go back to doing my show on a weekly basis. Right now we're in reruns. And
awesome.
We shall see what we shall see.
That is fantastic. I'm looking forward to being interviewed by you on your show. So I hope it opens soon.
I hope so, too. So anyway, I think it's sign-off time.
Okay. Thank you so very much. You're awesome. And thanks to all our wonderful listeners, whether you called in and you patiently waited and listened while we spoke, or whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here from Facebook or someplace else where we post, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And thank you for pointing out the problem with the sound. I'll continue looking into that until we fix it or minimize it.
Okay, bye.
Be well. Bye-bye. Be well.